he's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Wednesday, the midweek edition, the October 1st, first day of the fourth quarter of 2025 edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only firm. I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. Where were you at midnight last night? Did you turn into a pumpkin? The government closed down, and also since then we've received the private payroll reports from ADP. That's going to be the only jobs report we get this week. ADP is obviously not a government entity, but a private entity. And as a result, we've got the Dow down right now 59 points. It hit a new all-time high yesterday, okay? The Dow down 13 basis points right now. The NASDAQ down a little bit more. It's down 84. That works out to 37 basis points. 22,576. Its all-time high was still 2 weeks ago on that Monday. The S&P 500 is down 19. That's 29 basis points. The small caps down 22 basis points. I guess the good news out of all of this is we're getting a drop in interest rates. The 10-year is down 5 basis points to 4.09, and the other good news is gold, new all-time high. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And we're here, I'm here with Barry Kite, chartered financial analyst. It is the first day of the fourth quarter.
First day of the shutdown.
Shutdown. Do you know where your portfolio is at? Do you know where interest rates are at? Do you know where your stocks are at? Do you know where the gold is that's hidden in your backyard? It's hitting a new all-time high today, above 3,900 for the first time. I think it's also significant to note that the Dow hit a new all-time high yesterday by a few points. But, you know, we've been on kind of a high alert. We've had this massive run in the market since April the 8th of this year. And at some point, you're going to get a top in this current run, and you're going to get some kind of a correction. That's just the way the markets work. You know, there's some profit taking going on. And I always work under the assumption that when the market hits a new all-time high and then backs off a day or two, I just assume, okay, well, that's the peak. We need to be careful now. But it wasn't the peak in the Dow, because the Dow hit a new all-time high yesterday after peaking a couple of weeks ago. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500, however, you got to go back to a week ago Monday, and those were the highs there, temporary highs. We'll see if we can eclipse those numbers here in the coming days. We got a little bit of a headwind here. We had a decent day in the market yesterday. The Dow was down, but the NASDAQ was up 30 basis points. Oil, Bitcoin rally, that continues. We're going to talk about that a little bit. And NVIDIA had a very strong day yesterday. It topped $4.5 trillion. $4.5 trillion. That is, I don't know. I've heard that Aramco, which is Saudi Arabia's big oil company, is bigger than that. Of course, it does not trade on the U.S. stock exchange. But NVIDIA hitting $4.5 trillion yesterday. And NVIDIA is down just a little bit. The other significant piece of that NVIDIA story is it broke out to a new all-time high. So if you're thinking that the NASDAQ peaked 2 weeks ago and we're going to get a 20% correction, well, I would say I would think twice before you accept that assumption, because NVIDIA is probably the leader in the NASDAQ. Lord only knows what percent of the NASDAQ it is these days and what percent of the S&P 500 and what percent of the Dow it is. But it's a very, it carries a very heavy weight at $4.5 trillion in all of those indexes. And let's just say that the market leader hit a new, broke out yesterday. It's been in a sideways trend since late July. And yesterday was a breakout, which is a significant event. It can be a significant event because a breakout through resistance levels can be the beginning of a new uptrend. And you're saying, well, Bill, how can a new uptrend begin in a $4.5 trillion company? Look at my five-year target price on NVIDIA. I don't think NVIDIA has hit its ultimate top yet because the earnings expectations for next year and the year after that and applying a decent reasonable multiple to those shares would suggest that NVIDIA still has quite a bit of upside potential from here. Now, a lot can happen between here and now. That's why we look at these things every day. Competition is coming along. There's a big competitor out there in China. And there's a competitor, there's a private company here in the U.S. That also is trying to come up with the chip to equal or match NVIDIA's. And, of course, that would be a big downside risk for NVIDIA if that were to happen. And, of course, this gold rally, it has not hit a new high. It has not peaked. Is it going to hit 4,000? It's at 3,000. It hit 3,910 this morning. This is the best month it's had since January of 2012 on U.S. shutdown fears and rate cut expectations. And that begs the question, I'll ask Barry this question here, do you think that this ADP private payrolls report of minus 32,000 all but guarantees, what are the odds, what are the prediction markets saying on a rate cut at the next meeting? And then we'll talk about how long the government shutdown can last, because the prediction markets are all also weighing in there, but what about this ADP jobs report? Should we be worried?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the ADP, we talk about it all the time. You know, basically, it kind of has a lot of false signals. A lot of times, the non-farm payrolls, certainly the one you put more, put more credence to, right? Of course, in this unique situation, I was just reading that there's only, I think, one employee left at the Bureau of Labor and Statistics.
Yeah.
Right? So there's
it's
only
the
one
janitor.
Employee left.
Right? But he could probably up with better numbers than they did last year, you know.
Well, and we're not getting, you know, not getting the weekly jobless claims tomorrow, not getting the Friday non-farm payroll. So, you know, the only thing we really have to look at right at this particular moment in time is ADP. And so
and it was bad.
And it was. And that's why you've seen, you know, you saw Treasury rates, to actually yields go down because of, this kind of helps lead more to a rate cut, because we're at 99% chance of of a quarter point cut now at the October 29th decision. And then if you look back by the end of the year, there's a 91% chance that we are 50 basis points lower than where we're at right now. So
okay, that's good news. And I think the government shutdown, the average government shutdown's been 2 to 3 weeks. The European markets have completely shrugged it off. The Europe markets rebounded, not too worried about the government shutdown. They're going to come up with, I mean, these are short-term issues that they get resolved pretty quickly. And I also saw Conagra Brands today beat their estimates, but they are talking about inflationary pressure. So again, there the Fed has two, they have a conundrum. They have to weigh the jobs market, which looks to be weak, although I'm going to make an argument that it's not so weak here in a moment. And they have to worry about the inflation kicking back in. But I saw that Austin Goolsbee, who is not a Trump fan, I mean, he was one of the main guys in the Biden administration on economics. He's out of the University of Chicago. I'm not talking about Chicago today. They beat my Padres yesterday 3-1. If we lose today, we're out. Okay,
you get some pressure today. I mean,
yes,
you got to win entire baseball season for you, right?
You got to win two in a row here. Anyways, he's from the University of Chicago, and he's saying that he's not seeing the weakness in the jobs market. He says you got to look underneath at wages going up and other factors, and he says he's not seeing weakness in the jobs market at all, and that's coming from somebody from the Democratic side, from the Biden-Harris side, who is on the financial channels quite a bit. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, I think we've got Monty Hall at the helm of the country. Let's make a deal. I can't believe, you know, somebody ought to catalog all the deals that have been made. Whether you like the deals or not, whether you agree with them or not, there's been a lot of deals made. And yesterday there was a big deal that kind of flew under the radar. The European drug makers are trading higher today as the EU markets react to a new drug pricing deal announced by the Trump administration. And he's also carving out a couple, he made private deals and exempted a couple of companies here, including Pfizer. Okay, I'm going to look at Pfizer stock today. Pfizer not only has a new, wow, look at that breakout on Pfizer. It's got new life all of a sudden. Trump made a individual deal with Pfizer.
Right. Yep.
And Pfizer also bought that company, I can't think of the name, Metsera, which has a once-a-month GLP drug candidate for weight loss. And I think he also made a deal with Lilly because Lilly stock is doing the same thing today as Pfizer is. We own Lilly. We don't own Pfizer. Look at that chart on Lilly today, LLY. And I don't know what other drug stocks that he did the deal with, but you're seeing gains today in AstraZeneca, which is Swiss, Merck, Germany. That's the German version of Merck, Roche, which I believe is also Swiss, Novartis, Glaxo, Sanofi, and Novo Nordisk, which obviously is out of Denmark. So four of Pfizer's products, including its blockbuster arthritis drug Xeljanz, will be initially available from the site called TrumpRx. He likes to put his name on things. Have you noticed that?
Does he not? That's pretty good.
I mean, you go to Las Vegas and everything's blaring out at you, Nia, and there's that Trump Tower, which is all gold, right?
I mean, I'm pretty sure Obama would like his name off of Obamacare, Trump is like, he just throws his name into the TrumpRx.
He's offering discounts of up to 85% for direct purchases. So I don't know how all of that works, but we'll figure it out. Rick Perry's data center REIT Fermi prices at $21 per share.
Yeah, you talked about that yesterday.
Yeah, that's going to be a data center publicly traded REIT. I'm not a fan of non-traded private REITs, and I'm going to do a little discussion in the second half of the show on all of these private investments that are all of a sudden coming up. Private debt, private equity, they're democratizing it, making it available to the little guy. I've seen this pattern before where Wall Street comes up with something and they run with it. and it doesn't end up well. I'm thinking of 08 and 09 when they were packaging up the subprime loans. Private is risky. Anything private is risky, and I don't think the private REITs, the non-traded REITs, really behaved and did what they want to do. Your biggest issue with something private is illiquid liquidity, and we'll discuss that here in a bit. But they're going full speed ahead with this private stuff, Barry.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, and I guess if you're going to be in a space, right, data REIT seems like it would be a nice buzzword if you're raising money at the moment for
it's public.
Kind of
fund. Okay, Fermi's public.
Yeah, what was the company? I was trying to remember. What was the company we wrote about a handful of years ago? And then remember they got purchased by another company, but they used to be in the data center business too, but they got purchased by.
Yeah.
I want to say they got purchased by one of the companies.
Yeah, we made some money
towers.
On that. Yeah. And, you know, these public REITs, there are data center REITs that are public today. There's one really big one, but they haven't done that well, okay? So, anyways, keep that in mind. Now, let's go to rare earth. Nova Minerals wins a $43 million U.S. government award to secure antimony supply. And Barry, while I'm talking about the other companies involved here, look up antimony very quickly. I used to know what it's used for. I know it's used in nuclear, and it's a rare earth. It's a critical mineral. But Nova Minerals is NVA. It's in the app. Alaska seems to be another hotbed of rare earth. I think it's got kind of
batteries, lead antimony alloys for lead acid batteries.
Yes,
flame retardant.
Yes, and I think it's used in it has nuclear uses too. But
fireworks.
we got to have the 4th of July. So anyways, there's a big antimony investment or contract, NVA. The Energy Department also names Oklo and three others for a nuclear fuel line project. The other two companies are private, but Oklo has been selected by the U.S. government for its new pilot program to build advanced nuclear fuel lines. All right. So, anyways, that's another one.
By the way, CoreSite.
Yeah, CoreSite. We own CoreSite.
They got purchased by American Tower in 2021 for $10.4 billion. But yeah, they were they were actually to me the last pure play of a data center. I mean, they had, I think, 20 or so data centers.
No. There's one other one that's super big, and I'll think of it. There's another one that is data center. There's one in China, GDS, which is a Chinese data center operator. I watch that stock on a regular basis. It hasn't done very well, but there is one in the U.S. that's quite large. That is a REIT that specializes in data centers. Okay, Lithium America is the other one. Shares climb after Secretary of Energy Chris Wright confirms that the U.S. government will acquire a stake in the company. And this is the same thing that they did with Mountain Pass and MP Materials. And if I'm not mistaken, MP or Lithium America is in that same area of Nevada. Where, you know, it's thought that there's rich deposits of rare earth minerals there. So there's another deal there. That is publicly traded, Lithium America, LAC. And, of course, Mountain Pass is the one that we own in our emerging growth portfolio, which is the most aggressive one. Then there's another company here that's publicly traded, BWXT. BWX Technologies, they get a $1.6 billion contract from the Department of Energy to produce high-purity depleted uranium. Now, this is another thing that's going on, is they're taking the used uranium from those reactors and renewing it to be used again. So BWXT is another one that you can look at. It's had a pretty good track record here. And it is a publicly traded company, but it's going to be using their technology at the Jonesboro, Tennessee site where they're going nuclear. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. EQIX. Equinix. That's one I was trying to think of, Barry. It is a $76 billion REIT that specializes in data centers.
Well, and you're right. I looked through like all the big publicly traded data center names, and that whole sector just really has nothing's really happened there. You would expect that they would be getting movement like all these other places.
Well, I use my iPhone to look up baseball scores, to listen to my music collection, to check the tide tables, all right? I got to know when low tide is. But I also have an analyst in my pocket, in my iPhone. It's called Best Stocks Now app. And look, within seconds here, I can say, I have access to ask the app, how has Equinix performed over the years? We're over the last, this is the first place I go is the batting average, just like a baseball player. Over the last 10 years, Equinix has delivered an average annual return of 13.9%. That's pretty good for a REIT. The S&P has delivered 25%, but their performance has been decelerating big time. You can look at the chart. It's not very good. Over the last 5 years, you've gotten a paltry 2.4% return. That includes the dividend yield on Equinix, EQIX, which is the biggest one out there. They're headquartered in Redwood City in the Bay Area, and the dividend yield on EQIX is 2.4%. But over the last 12 months, it's really, really done poorly. According to the Best Stocks Now app, my analyst in my pocket here, it's down 9.4% over the last 12 months, while the S&P is up 16.6%. And year-to-date, EQIX is down 15.5%. I mean, what is that? I think that EQIX probably has a lot more competition now. And I think maybe are we overbuilding in data centers? I don't know. Or is EQIX not getting any of the new business on these data centers? But it has not performed, like I say, very well. Now, if we do a valuation on it, that's the second part. Now, here's where you've really got an analyst in your pocket. Anybody can look up the track record, although it's kind of difficult. If you can find a website that shows 1 year, just like a mutual fund, 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year compound annual returns. But the valuation is what's critical in my book, and we have it with 71% upside potential over the next 5 years. We like 80% or more. And I have a hunch that the consensus growth rate of 11% per year, that sounds a little bit high to me. I'm just going to see what their growth has been here recently. I think, oh, yeah, that's got to be adjusted downwards. The analysts are wrong on that growth rate. I overwrite the consensus analyst 5-year growth rate if I think it's wrong. I think it's probably more in the 6 to 7% area, and that's going to really lower. I'm going to overwrite that. I check these on a regular basis. Lower Equinix growth rate, and that's going to affect the 5-year target price. So anyways, I wouldn't go running out and buy Rick Perry's new offer. He's going to get rich off of it. But I don't know about you. You know, that's usually how things work. The purveyors of all of this private. Okay, now, I want to have this discussion on private. This is the big thing in our business today. There's no question about it. And I've seen many things come along, new products. Prudential was infamous for their partnerships, which many of them blew up. Okay, I personally got burnt in two partnerships that a broker put me into.
You told that story
40 years ago. Yeah, when I was starting to get money put into my profit sharing plan at our family business. I consulted some Merrill Lynch guys, I think they were, and they put me into partnerships. Now, looking back, I know why. I know how the game works. They made 10% commissions.
Probably.
And whoever put the partnership together, they're charging big fees inside of those to manage these partnerships, okay? So all of that blew up. And Prudential got into all kinds of trouble, the Rock, during that period of time. I've seen the in 08 and 09, all over the country, these things started blowing up in people's pockets, right? Blowing up like Iceland and Greenland. And they had invested in something called, subprime debt.
Well, yeah, and you had limited partnerships too. I mean, even in the late '80s, when they changed the tax law, you know, you would have them for tax losses on purpose, and so
yes, okay,
all of them basically didn't provide that benefit anymore, and they all went. You know, I've seen those things. I still see some of those things sitting on people's statement because it's from 1988,
yeah.
You can't get rid of it.
No, you can't get rid of it, and it's worth pennies on the dollar. Now comes along, enter stage left, the private REITs. Well, I had a competitor in San Diego that was also a big radio guy, nationwide radio guy, that was socking people away. I never bought one private REIT, not one. I had no interest whatsoever. Why buy a private REIT when there's hundreds of publicly traded REITs, because there was a big commission involved, and supposedly they were non-correlated to the market. You know why? Because they weren't pricing them every month. Well, if you get on your statement, your REIT is worth the $100,000 that you put into it, the market goes down 20%, let's say, and they list your REIT. Your REIT didn't go down. Well, that's because they weren't pricing it. SEC caught on and said, wait a minute, you've got to price these things every month. Well, guess what? You know, REITs are very vulnerable. I don't know how you can say they're not correlated to the stock market. Go back and look at 08 and 09. The REITs were down 79%. Is that non-correlated? They hold up just fine during a sell-off in the market. Bull, they're right on the front lines when there's a sell-off in the market. The property REITs, the office towers, the commercial shopping centers, the malls, etc. You're trying to tell me they're non-correlated to the market? Now, enter stage right. Look, you have to do your own homework. At the end of the day, you're responsible for your investments. I'm just the guy in between these investments and you trying to keep you out of trouble. Number one, and number two, trying to do the best that I can, I stay in the public markets. So the guy who was on the radio doing the private REITs, he lost his license. He fought it. It went to the Supreme Court. But he lost his license for plowing people into private REITs. Barry, how many private REITs have transferred to us? I haven't seen any lately. But there were a bunch of them that came to us that weren't, you can't sell them. They were illiquid. Unless they go public or are bought out, they're illiquid. The secondary market is 10 cents on the dollar, right?
Yeah. We had one that went public and, went public with a bit of a haircut. And so then there was some liquidity, right? And then others, you may be able to ask for liquidity every four, you know, every 3 months, for example, but, you know, you're not guaranteed any liquidity.
No.
You know, you can say you want to sell all and not sell any. You know?
Bill Gunderson is a guy who's seen a lot during the 25 years. I'm sure I haven't seen everything yet. There's a lot more that I'll see, but now they're plowing money into private debt. This is the hottest thing going out there. And I heard the CEO of Franklin Templeton being interviewed on Bloomberg this morning, and they are all in. That's the hottest ticket right now, is packaging private debt and selling it to the general public. Barry, just give me your comments on why is there private debt? You know, there's a bond. We buy individual bonds. That's public corporate bond debt. What is private debt, and how risky is it? Well, think about it. Mull on that for a minute. When we come back, give me your thoughts. I have my thoughts, and they're not good. And they're also packaging private equity. And private equity firms are buying up private companies almost at any price, because of all of a sudden there's this demand for private equity for individual investors. We'll be right back. You gotta go where you wanna go. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. The biggest splash that I've seen in many, many moons in our industry, Barry, is under the guise alternative. Alternative investments.
And it's been going on for a while. I mean, you remember, it really started kind of, you know, around 08, 09, and then, you know, whether they threw a mutual fund wrapper on it to kind of provide some liquidity, whether they put it in an ETF, right? Of course, now, what, you know, what you're talking about in terms of this is private lending. So essentially, it's, you know, businesses where a lot of them, you think of it as an alternative finances, financing potentially, right? So instead of a...
like a pawn shop.
Well, instead of a bank, right? Yeah, instead of, you know, instead of using a bank as
hard
an intermediary
money
area, right? They'll use a, you know, pay a higher rate, usually a shorter term time period. The idea, obviously, is to get the business to where it needs to be and then get rid of the debt, right?
Or have you ever made a loan to a buddy? Have you ever made a loan to a buddy?
Yeah, it's like
In high school, I can remember loaning a few guys. Hey, Bill, you know, it was the same people all the time, or at the track, or I remember at the track, I had a guy racetrack. He'd come up to me, "Hey, Bill, you think you can spare a 20? You know, I don't have any gas money." You mean you gambled away your gas money? You can't get home. All right. You know, I learned my lesson very quickly. Do not loan money to a friend or a family member or whatever.
Well, and that's what, you had just recently we had one of the buy now, pay later companies just had a big, you know, swath of their, buy now, pay later business, you know, kind of that debt. They sold it off to a company who, you know, is going to essentially be responsible for it,
yes,
right? Just because it's, there's no real... there's
high
not
risk.
Much recourse. Yeah, there's not much recourse there for a lot of the buy now, pay later folks.
Now,
so
where are the... okay, so you've got this... this is a movement like you can't believe. I mean, it's Franklin Templeton's all in. Okay, if they're all in, then you got to know that Morgan's... all the rest of them are all in. They're going to come after me for even saying this, right? That I am very, very... I do not like things that aren't liquid. That's why I'm not a fan of annuities. Never bought a private REIT. Never would buy a limited partnership that's not publicly traded. I would never, ever again do that. I learned my lesson when I was in my 30s.
The hard way, right? Yeah, you learned
okay.
The hard way.
So let's just say we're creating, let's just say ABC on Wall Street is creating this giant, they call them alternative credit offerings. That's the guise. That's the label. We're offering alternative credit. And guess what? You're getting a better yield than what you would get on U.S. Treasuries. They're juicing their returns, okay? Who's providing the money to loan? Where is the money coming from to loan out? It's coming from the investors. They raise a big pool of money, let's just say $1 billion, and we're going to go out and buy up and loan out money called private credit, all right? It's your money that they're lending, and they're getting a big management fee. Now they're responsible for lending the money, finding those that are worthy of their lending, I suppose, and then managing the debt along the way. And they use this word alternative because supposedly it's not correlated to the market or the economy. What's the first thing to go when people start to get laid off, when the economy goes south? Do you think private credit is a safe place to be? I don't. But, okay, and that's why, you know, I played the song. You got to go where you want to go. Do what, well,
the deal matters, right? I mean, that's the one thing that's tricky, the way they're packaging it, you know, to me, packaging this stuff up is, you know, there's a lot of, you know, credit, you know, essentially, you know, credit analysis that needs to be done on a deal by deal basis. And, you know, when you're purchasing, you know, a big swath of this debt, say across the board, right? Well, you're going to get mixed quality in terms of, you know, what's underneath the hood.
What were we told in 08 and 09 about the loans, that the home loans that they were doling out, that they were prime? Remember, the ratings agencies had them at prime when they weren't at all. They were very subprime, and most of them blew up in people's faces all across the world. Those things blew up. To me, that was a safer thing. At least you had some collateral in the property itself. But it was a time, too, when the properties were inflated. The properties go down in value. There goes your collateral. This is private credit. So I see Brown Brothers Harriman is forming a new subsidiary to house its $55 billion structured credit business. So I'm just saying that, and you know, they're putting it, this is an exclusive product. It's a U.S. wealth management channel. They've got massive distribution channels set up to sell this stuff. I'm just saying, you got to be your, at the end of the day, you're responsible for, and now, even riskier. I would say that private companies are very risky. Private debt is even riskier than that. But you do your own homework. But if you're at one of these big firms, I mean, there's not a day that goes by that I don't get an email from some big alternative conference that's taking place that they want me to come attend and learn about all of the new alternatives that are out there. And they'll have 10 presenters, and each one represents somebody that's put together an alternative investment that you need to invest in now. Number one, my smell test is it liquid? If I need the money, can I? Well, they're not liquid. They're not liquid. Number two, what is the real risk? Can you disclose? I mean, I just know from a personal loan or private loans that the bank's not making. Oh, man, that just does not pass the smell test. Now, who gets left holding the bag? Spirit Airlines is going to their bondholders, 470. This is a public company. Their bonds are upside down, and they've got to cut a deal with them. Private debt is way below a Spirit Airlines. I'm just saying, that's my warning to you, and it won't be on our menu here at Gunderson Capital Management. All right, to talk with us, 855-611-BEST, to get a four-week trial to our newsletter, GundersonCapital.com. GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.